AgriTalk is brought to you by Full Scale from Helena. Grow strong returns this season with breakthrough foliar nutrition from Full Scale at Reproduction. We talked yesterday in the first hour of AgriTalk about how farmers across the middle of the country are cautiously optimistic about the future of agriculture. And I find it fascinating that the Ag Economy Barometer actually quantifies the cautious optimism. Today, we are checking in on the state of ag in the state of Iowa.
Live from this day via Farm Journal broadcast, this is AgriTalk. This morning, we begin with a conversation with Pro Farmer's own Washington correspondent, Jim Wiesmeyer. Then we introduce a new feature called the State of Ag with Iowa Secretary of Agriculture Mike Nagg, along with Iowa Corn Growers Association President Carl Jardon and Iowa Poultry Executive Director Kevin Stiles. And right after the news, Greg Henderson from Drovers. I'm handsome newsman Davis Michelson, and now the host of AgriTalk, Chip Lorre.
This day, the most descriptive you could get.
This is the one we have at this point in the day.
Yeah.
There's no telling what could happen. What we do know is this day is here. That's
wow.
What we know. That's what we know
wow.
So far.
Mm-hmm. Did you try a new variety of that organic tea or something this morning, Davis?
New variety? No, same old variety, but I did get a workout in this morning.
Ooh.
So I will tell you, I'm optimistic. And shameless plug, if you want to know how this day turns out, I know a radio show that comes on at 2:06 Central Time. That'll give all the details.
All the details.
Of what has happened at least up until this afternoon in this day.
Fantastic. Well, the grain markets, I love it. I love it. And I'm not sure if I'm talking to the real Davis Michelson or not, talking about this workout and everything.
Uh-huh. I know.
But, wow. Okay. Yeah. Soybeans off to a great start today. 25, 30 cents higher in the old crop contracts. November soybeans are up 13 and three quarters on my last check. Got corn prices 3 to 5 cents higher. Wheat is still trading lower, and the livestock markets are under a little bit of pressure here this morning. But I would not be surprised if we don't see that market turn around, the hog market in particular, turn around and find some buying before the end of the day. Great conversations coming your way today about what is going on with agriculture in the state of Iowa, some of the challenges, some of the opportunities that we are looking at. We're going to take a look at a couple of different segments of the ag industry in the state of Iowa, and it's a great conversation. I'm looking forward to you hearing it, it's going to be fun.
It's a thing we're doing, right? It's a new thing we're doing. We're hoping that we can get secretaries and commissioners of ag from other states, as well as farmers and experts and other people in the know from other states to feature the state of ag, right?
That's right. Looking forward to it.
Yeah, me too.
I think when we do Hawaii, we need to go directly there and do it on the ground. Maybe
boots
Alaska
on the ground
too.
Research.
Maybe Alaska too.
I'm down.
Yeah.
Yep.
Okay.
Mm-hmm, for sure.
All right. Let's get to it. What you got in the news?
Chip, following sharp increases in commodity prices, farmers and ranchers across the Midwest and the Plains are paying off bank loans and spending for big ticket purchases, according to a report from the Federal Reserve yesterday. According to the report, quote, with better financial outcomes in 2020, capital spending loans for farm borrowers also strengthened in the fourth quarter and are expected to increase in all districts in coming months. However, continued weakness in cattle markets and harsh weather, quote, still left some headwinds for some producers. That's according to economists from the Kansas City Fed, which compiled the report. Chip?
Yeah, we talked about a lot of that yesterday, that the cautious optimism is out there. And as a result, one of the reasons that we call it cautious is because they are paying off the debts and moving forward.
The budget reconciliation measure used for the COVID aid plan the Senate is expected to work on potentially into the weekend could trigger pay-as-you-go budget rules and force cuts to farm support programs, according to Senate Ag Committee Ranking Member John Boozman, who noted, quote, in their rush to fill this bill with non-COVID-related spending, congressional Democrats have recklessly put the farm community at risk just when the ag economy is starting to turn a corner after several difficult years. I wonder if Jim knows anything about this.
That's right at the top of my list to talk with Jim about when we get him on in the next segment.
President Joe Biden, Vice President Harris, and Transport Secretary Pete Buttigieg will meet with a bipartisan group of House members on infrastructure. Biden campaigned on a promise to pass a $2 trillion infrastructure package and is expected to send Congress an infrastructure proposal after the passage of the COVID-19 relief bill. Representative Peter DeFazio, chair of the House Transport Committee, this week called for the federal government to bear the cost of funding a new infrastructure package, saying, quote, "The states can't go it alone," stressing the need for federal funding. Chip?
Yeah, and they can't. These are huge, huge projects, and it does take federal support. But, I mean, we're going to stack a $2 trillion on top of a $1.9 trillion bill. It's a lot of spending very early in an administration.
It's a lot of trillions. Saudi Arabia and Russia are discussing a proposal to bring back a combined 1 million barrels per day of oil production to global markets. That's according to the Wall Street Journal. The two sides are reportedly meeting today along with other OPEC Plus members to hammer out a deal. OPEC Plus initially agreed to cut production by a record of 9.7 million barrels per day in 2020 before easing cuts and eventually down to 7.2 million from January. That accounts for roughly 7% of the global supply, Chip.
Yeah, and as we get that news, we've got crude oil futures up $3 a barrel.
Yep. You'll love this. Even as sales of U.S. corn to all destinations was at a marketing year low for 2020 and 21, there were big sales of corn shifted from unknown destinations to China. For the week ended February 25, more than 1 million tons didn't result in big sales overall because USDA figures only reflect sales activities that result in a net increase or decrease in total sales of a commodity to a foreign entity. Chip.
Gotcha. Thank you, Davis. Let's bring in Greg Henderson, editorial director at Drovers. How you doing, Greg?
Good morning, Chip. I'm very well. Thank you.
Good, good, good. So one of the first things that comes to my mind when I hear Colorado is the feedlot business in the state. It's always been something to celebrate until now. What's going on?
Yeah, absolutely. We've got over 1 million cattle on feed in Colorado, Chip. But regardless, Colorado Governor Jared Polis has proclaimed March 20, that's the first day of spring, as Meat Out Day. In other words, he's asking the state's residents to forego meat for a day, and that initiative is supposedly to educate consumers about the benefits of a healthful plant-based diet. Now, Chip, I'm not going to surprise you when I tell you the cowboys in Colorado are not very happy with their governor. And the move has inspired several counties in Colorado to proclaim March 20 as a day to celebrate meat rather than to avoid it.
So nice.
Just the numbers, Chip, $47 billion in agriculture in Colorado. About $6.3 billion of that comes from livestock production. And there's about 800,000 beef cows and, as I said, 1 million cattle on feed, 2.8 million cattle in Colorado, and the governor wants a meat out day.
Wow. First day of spring.
One more thing, the Colorado Cattlemen's Association is asking for donations of $200 to support Meat In Day, and $50 of which would go directly to supporting and feeding hungry children in Colorado.
You can find out
more at Colorado.com.
Colorado.com. I love that. Greg, yeah, May 20th, all the governor of Colorado did was convince me that we are having steak on March 20th here at the Flory Ranch.
I'll join you, Chip.
Amen, brother. It's Greg Henderson, editorial director at Drovers. Jim Wiesmeyer coming up next.
Your next piece of equipment is on MachineryPete.com. Search equipment from dealerships across the country to find what you're looking for, only on MachineryPete.com.
Welcome back to AgriTalk. I'm your host, Chip Flory. Glad that you could join us this morning. Got Davis Michelson with me.
Standing by.
Davis, I'm going to take a risk of just sending this whole segment completely off the rails. With the first question that I'm going to ask pro farmer policy analyst Jim Wiesmeyer.
I love it. Do it.
But
do
it. I'm just going to go ahead and do it and sit back. I don't know. This could be the only question that we ask. We'll see how it goes. Jim, how you doing?
pretty good. I'm tired because of all this news going on. I thought with Biden coming in, it would kind of mellow out, but it's actually amplified from the Trump administration.
Job security, baby. Job security.
Love it. So what is your take? What is your take on the first few weeks of the Biden administration?
The Biden team, Biden himself, they're committed to, Chip, I don't think there's any other way to say it, a radical transformation of this country. And if you recognize it now, you won't when they're done.
Yeah. Give me some examples of what you are talking about. I know, I think I know where you're going with this, but give me some examples.
Well, energy policy, and some of this is needed, by the way, but others aren't. But the whole of government approach, not just on climate change, but look at Vilsack in his comments so far. I wrote the other day, I quoted somebody that he's talking so much, he must think he's, you know, Dr. Fauci. But he's using not politically correct language now. I think it's political ideological language when he no longer says food security. You know, it's nutrition security. That means they're going to go back to telling us not what to eat, but how to eat, et cetera, et cetera. That goes back to the initial Obama administration. On the equity, the very sensitive equity terms, they no longer like to use the word equality. It's equity. It's just redistribution in another term. I mean, I don't know any other way to say it.
Right. It's almost like they're inventing language as they're doing this.
And they are.
Yeah. And I've noticed it as well, and it is exceptionally concerning. No doubt. The energy policy with the efforts to shut down those pipelines, he, as I understand it, Jim, when it comes to the Dakota Access Pipeline, the threat to closing that thing down is starting in Hollywood on the West Coast, right?
It did.
It's crazy.
And now it'll move. It'll move back into here for justifications on that. But they talk about jobs programs. I don't have to tell you the jobs impacts. You know, they're major.
Absolutely.
But this is why Warren Buffett got into railroads, because he saw this coming. And that's why the tanker, oil tanker cars, et cetera.
But if it's a policy against fossil fuels, against coal, no matter how clean burning you can make it by spiking with renewable fuels or with the scrubbers and everything, Jim, I mean, how long? Well, the rail play is going to be around for quite some time, because we can't just go cold turkey without fossil fuels and coal.
No. Well, Texas, all you have to mention is Texas. They taught us, again, you need base loads. And that means when S hits the fan, you got to have reliable energy. And that's fossil fuel based until whatever day that it's called making the electric grid work, Chip. And you need all of the above for that.
Right. I'm with you. Okay. Yesterday, I had a conversation in Farmer Forum. Randy from Nebraska, and Ryan up in South Dakota. But I asked him the question, the climate first approach to the policies coming out of the Biden administration, is it a source of concern or a source of opportunity for the year and years ahead? And they both said it was both, but ultimately the concerns may outweigh the opportunities. Is that how you kind of see things?
Yes, frankly, that's a good way to put it. Details. But I've never seen an issue in my 40 years here, Chip, that the whole of government approach to the climate change. Now, Biden wants to use, and this is why I think Vilsack really came back, he sees farmers as example number one to show their movement towards dealing with climate change. And so April 22nd is Earth Day. I think that they want to have some statements ready to show how farmers can be first in line to be a new revenue stream and to make their system work. We'll see.
Okay. So what's this story with Bozeman? It warns that COVID aid plan could trigger cuts to the farm programs. What are we talking about?
Okay, I'm going to try to put what he said in English. You know, the budget resolution that passed by both the House and Senate, they make the it makes the underlying COVID bill in order as written and as they spend. However, there's a statutory pay-go Congress, pay-as-you-go, that Congress will have to waive, or there will be huge cuts in Medicare and farm programs and under mandatory spending. Again, both budget resolutions excuse the bills from any point of order, but there's a statutory paygo that they cannot excuse themselves from a budget resolution. So at some point this year, Congress will have to waive the paygo, or there will be huge, what we call sequestration. Remember, across the board cuts coming. Now, Congress always does that. They love to spend, and then they love to waive any paygo provisions. So we'll have to see. But Bozeman is raising the red flag here, as I think he should.
Right. Okay. Now, what kind of payments? Well, when you talk about sequestration, you're talking about just across the board cuts to any payment coming out of USDA.
Mandatory payments, not discretionary each year, but mandatory. And those are farm program payments, Chips.
Right.
Their farm bill payments are mandatory. So, yes, it would have a huge impact on agriculture. And that's why he's raising the alarm. And again, if Congress does what it has in the past under both Republicans and, you know, Democratic administrations, they'll waive it. They'll exempt themselves.
Okay. Status of the stimulus package.
It'll be this weekend, if not early next week. It looks like they will have the votes, but they have to go through a votorama, as we call it, series of amendments, of which they'll defeat most, if not all of them. So we're going through the process. But they did have to taper back some of the key, you know, provisions, you know, such as, you know, those direct, you know, payment checks. If you make more than $80,000, you're going to get zero.
Okay. Anything in there that specifically farmers need to be aware of going forward?
Not on this one. We just need Vilsack to come out and uncork some of this money, the up to $2.3 billion that was announced. That's called CFAP AA, Additional Assistance. I think they're working on it. But, you know, Chip, I'm working on a special report for Pro Farmer that says, I got a guidance. I had a number of emails and calls from FSA county and state people. I won't mention states. They're very upset because they got a guidance from the Office of the Secretary in which it says facilities are required to maintain staffing at no more than 25% of employees or less.
What?
This is at the time when they're going through so many different signups. So you watch, USDA in the next few days or weeks are going to further extend signups because they can't handle it with under this, you know, guidance from Washington.
25%?
It's just stupid. No more than 25% of employees. Yeah.
Oh, good Lord.
Yeah.
Okay.
And they can't, visitors are not permitted until additional guidance can be approved. You know, customers should be provided service via phone and internet. So this is, and I understand why career workers at FSA, the unsung heroes that we've always said they are, they can't even keep up when they were fully staffed, let alone no more than 25%. So if they thought payments were getting behind on WIP Plus before, they haven't seen anything yet. It just doesn't make sense.
Yeah. This, we are started down a path, aren't we, Jim? We are started down a path that we need to be very careful with.
Yes. I mean, it's a change a minute. Now, I think this signals to me the White House knows that they have really 2 years, and Democrats, because I think they'll never say this publicly. They think in 2 years, after 2022 elections, the House is going to flip to Republican control. So they have 2 years. So you talk literally, it's an understatement to say they're hitting the ground running. You know, they're flying.
Absolutely.
They're flying here, Jim, to get things done.
We'll continue the conversation tomorrow morning on the free-for-all. Thanks, Jim.
Sure.
All right, that's Pro Farmer Policy Analyst Jim Wiesmeyer. The State of Ag in Iowa, up next.
Time for Markets Now with the experts from Pro Farmer.
Joining us now, Pro Farmer Editor Brian Grady. Let's go straight to the soy complex, Beej. Man, what's going on with beans? That's a big move to the upside.
It is. I think the story is soy oil. I mean, it's just ripping right now to the upside. And so it's been the leader, and beans have actively followed, obviously, with 20-plus cent gains in the old crop contracts. So we have backed off the session highs a little bit there. Meal market has been, just had a really tepid response. And so, you know, I think that a couple things come into play here. Soybeans, one, the May contract has not taken out its February 25th contract high yet. And on February 25th, when we made that high, we backed well off of the highs into the close. And so the close today is important, and whether we make a new contract high is important, and all of that. The other factor is that the crude oil market is ripping to the upside, and that's given the soy oil an added boost today. So a couple things going on there in the soy complex, definitely.
Absolutely. Yeah, the May bean oil is out to new highs and trading on session highs as we speak. Okay, take us over to the livestock. Great pork sales in the export sales report.
Yeah, absolutely. Huge pork sales, the highest weekly total since the week ended December 10th. So, you know, a long span there, and China was the major buyer, but really a limited price response in the futures. And some of that is the premiums that the futures hold to the cash market already. So I think that's a limiting factor. Relatively quiet trade in the cattle market so far this morning, too. So not a whole lot of active trade in live cattle or hogs.
Gotcha. Thanks, Brian. That's Pro Farmer Editor Brian Grady on Markets Now.
Opinions expressed on AgriTalk do not necessarily reflect the views of Farm Journal Broadcasting, affiliate stations, or sponsors.
It starts with a plan. That's why America's Conservation Ag Movement is inviting you to get your farm business ready for 2021 with a free resource stewardship planning guide. Get your free guide today at agweb.com/ACAM.
And welcome back to AgriTalk, everybody. Glad that you could join us today. And this is a special day because we are going to take a look at the state of ag across America. But instead of talking in general overviews, we're going to be drilling down a little bit deeper here, looking at how agriculture is pushing forward at the state level. We're going to be starting the process with Iowa, and here to help us understand how farming is doing in the state is Iowa Secretary of Agriculture, Mike Nag. Secretary Nag, welcome back to AgriTalk.
Well, it's great to be back, Chip.
Yeah, love having you here. Love having the conversations with you. Okay, now, obviously, guys, when people outside of Iowa think about agriculture in the state, the first thing that comes to their mind is corn. Some might think hogs, which is a perfectly acceptable answer. Mm-hmm. Some might think potatoes, which is not a perfectly acceptable answer, but corn is atop the list for many, and representing corn is Iowa Corn Growers Association President Carl Jarden. Carl, welcome to AgriTalk.
Well, thank you, Chip. Thanks for having us today.
You bet. Glad you're here.
I farm in the very southwest corner of Iowa in Fremont County. We grow corn and soybeans, and I still dabble in some Holstein genetics. I can't get that out of my head. And we're thankful for the governor for the renewable fuels infrastructure program. That she has upped the ante on that. And so we're thankful for that. So I'm very optimistic about agriculture. Our exports are up, and our usage is up, and, you know, our livestock brethren. We can't forget them.
Right.
You know, that's still one of our top priorities is helping the livestock industry.
You bet. You bet, Carl. Thank you. We're going to cover some of those issues, no doubt about it. And in most states, there is a sector in agriculture that people know is there, but few have a real appreciation for just what it brings to the party, how important it is to the industry. And representing that segment for Iowa's Iowa Poultry Association Executive Director, Kevin Stiles. Kevin, welcome to AgriTalk. How are you?
I'm doing well. Thanks for having me today, Chip. Appreciate
it. Good, good, good. Real quick, tell us about the Poultry Association.
Well, in Iowa, we have an active poultry association. We represent poultry and egg producers across the country, across the state. We have about 57 million laying hens. About one out of every six eggs that's consumed across the country comes from the state of Iowa. So we have a role in providing educational and advocacy opportunities for our producers here in the state. And, of course, we do have a growing broiler population in the state of Iowa as well.
Yeah, absolutely. Okay, let's get an update on the state of ag in the state of Iowa. And Secretary Nag, coming off of 2020 with the disruptions that we saw to the biofuels industry that Carl was talking about, and the disruption that Kevin's group had to deal with the demand destruction for eggs in particular across the country. What a year to come back from, huh?
It is. And, you know, we keep using the word that has to be used, I think, is just unprecedented, right? In so many ways, it's impacted all of our lives personally. But when you think about the supply chain disruption that occurred in this country, really around the world, due to COVID, due to the economies shutting down, due to the massive disruption to food service, you know, Kevin's industry, the egg industry in particular, severely impacted by that, ethanol, biodiesel, you know, just completely unprecedented. And yet, you know, I think what impresses me and what I'm so proud of as I look across the Iowa ag community is that I saw a tremendous amount of resiliency and creativity that had to come into play to try to figure out how do you work through these challenges? How do you not just survive, but try to position for growth? And boy, I tell you that I'm just proud of what's happened, and I guess too how the ag community stepped up and took care of our neighbors. And even in some very, very challenging times, we were still had a whole bunch of folks, farmers and ag businesses in the ag community, that said we're experiencing tough times, but we know our neighbors are too. And so food security issues that came to the forefront and how folks responded to that. So I'm really proud of that, Chip, and how we really are positioned for growth going forward.
Right, right. Part of that growth, Carl already talked about it a little bit, Secretary Nag, is Governor Reynolds' commitment to the renewable fuels and ethanol in particular. That's got to be a joint effort. I'm sure that she's got you talking in her ear all the time about supporting that biofuels industry.
Well, absolutely. And, you know, that's one thing Iowa leads the nation in ethanol and biodiesel production. And so I've always said that if you're going to lead in production, well, then you better be leading when it comes to advocacy. And so we've got some great voices. The governor, Senators Ernst and Grassley, of course, are incredible champions for renewable energy broadly, but ethanol and biodiesel specifically. Of course, I do what I can, and we work hard to support that industry with the infrastructure that we need to offer higher blends. And there is a good conversation going on at the Capitol this year about how do we see a step change? How do we go to that next level? How do we get to E15 and beyond? How do we push to higher blends of biodiesel? That's a great conversation to be having and right here in the state of Iowa, but you know, across the country as well.
Yeah, Carl, biofuels, ethanol recovery there, that is so important to the future. I mean, we've got a great recovery in the corn market, but to keep the profitable situation going, Carl, we need to see that biofuels industry come back.
Sure, and that's good for the state, too. I mean, not just for the air we breathe and the water quality, but some independent studies have shown that that will increase the Iowa's GDP by $457 million and support like 3,500 new jobs. So that's significant. You know, mm-hmm. Just every town around here with an ethanol plant, you know, they employ 30 to 40, depending on what else they do, maybe even 50 people. And that's, right. You know, and I'm a firm believer that 7 jobs get you one more. So, you know, and the ripple effect of our basis and, you know, and that sort of thing, too, just really helps us. And then the more ethanol we use, the more distillers grain we'll have to feed our livestock and even the chickens can eat some distillers grain. So it's good for everybody, really.
You bet. You bet. Well, the motto of the Iowa Corn Growers Association is Corn Grows Iowa. You know, Iowans grow corn and corn grows Iowa. And that's a big part of it. But, Kevin, what we're talking about here is taking that raw product, that base product in the state of Iowa, and converting it into something that we can put on a table for people to eat. And that's where you guys come in at the Poultry Association. You mentioned 1 out of every 6 eggs across America comes from the state of Iowa. Iowa's the largest egg producer, isn't it?
We are, yes. Yeah. We produce about 16 billion eggs every year for America.
Unbelievable. And where do we sit on the list for turkey production?
Well, Secretary, in the top. Supplement
yeah, I was
going
to say, I'll jump
about,
in here.
6, 7.
Yeah, I say we're always in the top 10, 6, 7, right in there, and got 2 very good companies, West Liberty Foods and Tyson, of course, and so we've got a significant and growing turkey industry as well.
Yeah, absolutely. Kevin, economically speaking, what does the poultry industry, what does it mean to the state of Iowa?
Well, economically speaking, we contribute a lot to the state's bottom line. We have produced about $48 million in tax revenues, more than $2 billion in total sales, and about $450 million in labor income every year. Jeez. So that's according to Iowa State, and we're very proud of that and the role that we play in the state's economy.
Yeah, Secretary Neg, like I said at the start of the show, maybe people don't think about poultry production in the state of Iowa, but it's incredibly important to the economy.
Well, it is, and you know, you started to go there with talking about the commodity basis of Iowa agriculture, right? So we lead the nation in corn production. We're second in the country in soybean production, and what that means is we've got this great availability of feed ingredients and raw material. And then really the story of Iowa agriculture is value-added Iowa, you know, value-added agriculture. So whether that's livestock or renewable energy, we take that commodity bushel and we make it into something higher value, whether that be an egg, a gallon of milk, a gallon of ethanol, or Chip, we've even got a growing aquaculture industry in the state of Iowa. And that might surprise folks, but you say, well, but the components are all there. We've got good water, we've got available land, we've got cheap feed, low energy costs, and we're always striving for a business climate where companies of all kinds and producers of all kinds can thrive and grow. And so, you know, that's the magic, that's the recipe, right, that you can put together, and we do an awfully good job of converting that corn and soybean into high-quality protein.
Absolutely. Okay, we are talking about the state of ag in the state of Iowa. We've got Iowa Ag Secretary Mike Neg. We've got President of the Iowa Corn Growers Association, Carl Jarden. And we've got the Executive Director of the Iowa Poultry Association, Kevin Stiles. We've talked about where we're at. Now, let's talk about where agriculture is going in the future in the state of Iowa. We'll be back with more AgriTalk in a moment.
AgriTalk is brought to you by TechMix.
cattlemen, are you tired of losing newborn calves? Calf Perk is an energy boost that gets weak calves standing and nursing. Get Calf Perk from TechMix at calfperk.com.
Welcome back to Ag We're Talk. We are taking a look at the state of ag in the state of Iowa. And with us, Iowa Ag Secretary Mike Nagg, the Executive Director of the Iowa Poultry Association, Kevin Stiles, and the President of the Iowa Corn Growers Association, Carl Jordan. Secretary Nagg, when we think about the future of what agriculture looks like in the state of Iowa, what are some of the challenges that you've identified that will need to be overcome?
Yeah. You know, I share your, by the way, the optimism as we look ahead, right? You know, there's no doubt. And I was actually just down in Carl's neighborhood earlier this week looking at some flood recovery efforts held over from 19. It just reminds me, it's 19, flood, 20, all kinds of challenges, including drought. You know, agriculture will continue to face challenges. And that's just part of what we do. It's part of, how we have to build resiliency into our agriculture. And so weather events of all kinds are things we need to always be thinking about. Yeah. I think great challenges for our livestock producers are making sure that they're connected to consumers in a way that they're responding to consumers' needs, but also that we're not being driven by regulation in a way that's unreasonable. You know, you've got lots of states, particularly on the coast, that want to try to tell Iowa producers how they're going to do things. We know that there's a fine line between responding to consumers' preferences, and you know, we can do that as agriculture, but unreasonable regulation that drives up cost of production, that's something we can't have. And so I see that regulatory piece as being a real challenge, especially for livestock producers.
Right.
And you know, the other piece that we're always thinking about in Iowa, and it'll continue to be a challenge, but also let's call it a challenge/opportunity. And that's around our natural resources. You know, we're a state that we don't mine coal and oil. We've got soil and water. That is the basis of our agriculture, the basis of our economy. We've got to continue, like we have for many decades, to focus on soil erosion prevention, building soil health, and taking care of water. And that'll be something we have to continue to focus on. But hey, also this conversation around carbon and climate, I think that creates an opportunity too to drive some revenue back to farms, and rewarding producers for moving in the right direction in terms of conservation and soil health.
Exactly.
So that's a challenge for us. It will be, but I see lots of potential here. I guess the bottom line,
awesome,
Chip, is we're known for what we produce and how much we produce. We want to also be known for how we produce it, and I think we're well on our way.
Excellent. Excellent. I love that. Kevin, there's room for growth in your industry, isn't there?
Certainly is. And we're seeing growth continue today. People want more high quality protein, and eggs are the most economical source of that high quality protein. And we're finding more and more benefits found within the nutrients in egg all the time. Of course, during the pandemic, people were eating more at home. They were cooking, they were baking, and they were using plenty of eggs as part of that cooking.
Carl, when we talk about the future for corn in Iowa, I have to go backwards a little bit to talk about the future, because when we think about how corn yields have advanced over the years, you got to think that at some point we're going to hit a ceiling, Carl, but I don't know if we will. This is incredible. What's going on?
Oh, I think we're learning more and more all the time about the best methods for growing corn. And one of the things I'm optimistic about is using the Missouri River, making a export facility there to use the Missouri River like we should. That's been being my bonnet for quite a while, that we don't use the Missouri River like we should.
Gotcha.
And so I'm optimistic about that. And like Kevin said, I'm optimistic about livestock too and our exports. And like Secretary Nagg said, wouldn't it be great if we didn't export any corn, that everything we exported was either meat, milk, or eggs. Or ethanol or distillers grain. Kevin said, around the world, when we work with the Grains Council, you know, the easiest thing for I hate to say the word third world country, but a country that doesn't have the economic advantages, it's easier for them to start chicken production than it is any of the bigger livestock. So I'm optimistic about our exports and livestock and water quality and the whole nine yards. I'm optimistic.
Yep.
I should add that he has a good reason to be optimistic, because all of that growth in the layer industry has a big impact on the corn growers. Every chicken that's laying eggs in the state of Iowa is eating about a bushel of corn every year.
Yeah. Yeah.
Sure.
All those 57 million laying hens are eating about 57 million bushels of corn every year.
Absolutely. Excellent. Secretary Nag, we need to see these segments of agriculture in the state of Iowa stick together to advance the entire industry. And we've got two pretty good examples right here of how that's going to work going forward, don't you think?
Oh, we do. And you know, Chip, we're very blessed in this state to have. I wouldn't trade what we have here with anybody in the world. And what I mean by that is, of course, the opportunity, the natural resources that we have, the way that we approach things in this state in terms of a business climate and a regulatory climate. But I get to work with folks all across this agriculture spectrum. We have tremendous leadership in the commodity organizations and grower groups, and you nailed it. It's when we work together. It's when we have a strong unified voice on the policy things that are important to Iowa, like renewable fuels policy and trade policy. But it's when we work together. And it's also in those times that we stand together and help those in need. And again, I just I think what we've been through the last 12 months only reassures me that we're so well positioned for the growth because we have those fundamental pieces. Right. I'm very, very fortunate to get to work with these great leaders.
Well, and I am very fortunate to have had this conversation with you guys. Thank you so much. That's Carl Jarden. He is the president of the Iowa Corn Growers Association. Kevin Stiles, the executive director of the Iowa Poultry Association, and Iowa Ag Secretary Mike Nag. Thank you, gentlemen.
Thanks, Chip.
Thank you.
You bet.
Thank you.
All right.
Thank you, Chip,
for having us. You bet. Thank you, Carl. That wraps up today's AgriTalk. Come back this afternoon. We're going to have a conversation with Sue Martin right here on AgriTalk.